Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie No join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. It's me, Cindy Howes. I host this podcast. Hope you're doing great, and thanks for listening today. We're talking to Susan Warner aboard the Keyamo Cruise. We've posted a couple of these episodes so far, including Ani DeFranco with Carsey Blanton, as well as an interview last week with John Mook. And we have one more to come out after Susan's episode today. Next week, we're going to be releasing the interview between Mary Gaucher and Jamie Harris that was recorded live. They are a romantic couple, and it was so fun and insightful and inspiring to sit down and talk with them. It gets a little spicy, too. Looking forward to sharing that one next week. Before we get into Susan, let's talk about our mailing list. If you have not signed up for it, it's a once-a-month email that comes into your inbox. That's the best way to stay in touch with Basic Folk, and it lets you know who's coming on the podcast and who's been on recently and how we're feeling. And you can always respond and tell us how you're feeling, because we care. You can also follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. You can also make a contribution. We are a listener-supported podcast. You can donate $5 a month and get a Basic Folk beanie that was hand-knit by my mom. And make your contribution at our website, basicfolk.com/donate. There's also a link in the show notes. Okay, Well, listen, I got home from Alaska. When was it? Was it last week? And was hit with this like crazy cold. Like, it's so novel since the pandemic to get sick, at least for me. Like, it just like knocks me right over. And the worst part about it, it's like a chest cold. So it's like, I might sound a little sick to you right now. And I'm just like, just getting over the hump. But I'm like, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I feel like death. I hate everything. And also it's like really gray in Portland, Maine right now. So that's not helping. We did have one sunny day that I was like, oh my God, the world is full of possibilities. But anyways, that's where my head's right now, but I'm almost over it. Susan Warner. Susan Warner is on board Keyamo with us. She described Keyamo as a paid vacation. In our conversation, she reflects on her upbringing working on a farm. Susan discusses the hard work that shaped her, but also how she's learning to embrace rest and relaxation. Not an easy feat when you were raised to be such a hard worker. With humor and insight, she navigates the balance between a hardworking mindset and the need for downtime, revealing her strategies for managing stress and expectations in both music and life. Her latest album, Halfway to Houston, recently won the Album of the Year at Folk Alliance. That album is a continuation of her exploration of a place through its music. Previous releases saw her looking at New Orleans and Florida. In this particular case, on Halfway to Houston, she's focusing on the state of Texas, including the interconnectedness of communities across borders. The song Sisters on the album is about twin sister cities, El Paso, Texas, and Juarez, Mexico. As someone who's been around for a while, Susan talks about the importance of consistency and authenticity in her craft, emphasizing that hard work alone doesn't guarantee success. You want to work smarter, not harder. We definitely talked about that. It's about being consistently excellent. She also touches on the political landscape and how her songs aim to foster empathy and understanding, even in divided times. It's great fun talking to Susan Warner. It always is. One of my favorite memories of the Ke'ama cruise this year was while everybody was getting off the ship on the last day, Susan was walking off the ship, and Lizzie and I saw her for like 2 seconds, and then we were like waving like, goodbye, Susan, goodbye, we love you, we love you. And then she was also like talking back to us in that same high-pitched voice. It was fun. I guess like maybe you had to be there, but it was like a very, very fun memory. All right, let's take a listen to the title track from Susan's latest album. This is Halfway to Houston, and then we'll talk to Susan Warner on the Ke'ama cruise on Basic Folk.
She was halfway to Houston before I saw her know. Make your own damn coffee, that's all she wrote. Halfway to Houston, she left before dawn. Halfway to Houston, three quarters gone. She was halfway to Houston before she took my call, picked up, said goodbye, she hung up, and that was all. Halfway to Houston, she was really mad.
Susan Warner, welcome back to Basic Folk.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
How's it going? How's your cruise so far?
This is a blast. Are you kidding? This is a paid vacation. There's no such thing in the world anymore. And the minute you get on the ship and you put your suitcase down, mm-hmm. and you know you will not have to lift it again, you won't have to do anything about it. You hang your clothes up, you create your little campsite, and then we're out on the water. I mean, it's. I have no complaints, if you're asking. There are no complaints. I
Wonderful.
Have no complaints.
So this is your second Ke'ama.
Yeah.
Do you have any cruise tips for those interested?
You might want to bring a little something if you have a funky stomach, right?
Yes.
Because the ship, it's so huge, right? 99% of the time, you just forget that you're on a ship at all. But once in a while, it'll catch you with a little wonky step down a hallway or mm-hmm. something when the ship is turning. And your stomach may say hello to you. I know one guy having a hard time this cruise, but honestly, out of what, 2,000 people? I mean, that I know of anyway, one guy having a hard time. And then you put those bracelets on and it mm-hmm. went away. So there you go.
As for me, I just feel low-key drunk
uh-huh.
all the time.
Okay, that's not an unusual experience
it's
on a cruise
off.
Ship.
Okay, but I want to talk about the paid vacation aspect of it all. So you have spoken at length about growing up on a working farm with 5 siblings. You are no stranger to hard work. You are no stranger to the hustle. So what has your relationship been like to resting? And have there been times when your worker bee mindset has had to bump heads with the need to rest and relax?
That is a really kind question. I want to tell you, in terms of hard work, there's nothing harder than dairy farming, right? So
yeah.
Growing up, like, I don't think of my work as hard work, even though I'm busy at it, right? Every day in various ways. And I do a lot of shows and travel quite a bit. But I mean, that's hard work. So I feel like my entire life has been a cakewalk compared to that. So let's set the bar there, first of all,
that.
For hard work. Your second question was how to rest and relax. You know, one thing about the cruise, I did not buy the Wi-Fi package. Like, I'm just, don't know what's going on. Don't know. Have WhatsApp for communication with other people on the ship and with my partner back in Chicago. But that's it. And that feeling when you pull away and you put your phone, your cellular data is off and airplane mode, and it's an invitation to let go and really float away from the rest of your life. And This year, really, I'm enjoying that piece of it in a big way. It could have something to do with our current political situation. Mm. But I just feel my blood pressure drop, and I'm doing my best to enjoy it to the fullest.
More on our political situation later. But so this is something that I've been running up against. Like, I feel like I'm a hard worker, like very detail oriented to the max.
I can confirm.
I am like really struggling with working smarter, not harder.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been your experience with that? Like, how do you keep from spinning your wheels?
I say in songwriting workshops, when I do those, I say the phone is kryptonite. I actually hold it up right in front of a room full of people and say, this thing is kryptonite and it takes your superpowers. The more time you can spend away from that or navigating your relationship with that and saying, I'm going to look at this thing every 2 hours, but I'm not going to carry it with me. My pal Jamie Harris is really good about this. In Jamie's email signature, it says something like, hey, just let you know, I just check this email twice a day. So if I don't get back to you right away, please understand. Thanks for your patience.
Like, oh, man.
So smart.
It's like proactively setting the expectation for those around you that your time is going to be managed a little differently.
That's right. And as my partner used to say, the conversations, people used to have conversations in marketing meetings or other kinds of business meetings. They're like, okay, we're all getting upset. Is a child bleeding right now? No. Okay, so let's all just relax.
Truly, like, what are the stakes?
What are the stakes? Mm. Right? And so learning to manage that stress and how much to take on and how much to let float a little bit. And again, I just think that physical distance from a phone, so helpful.
Mm. All right, one more question about hard work. Sometimes, as we all know, hard work is not going to be the thing that saves you, that makes you. As a career musician, when did you learn the difference between hard work and luck?
Wow. You know, one word that comes up to me is consistency. Mm. Just be consistently excellent about everything you do. Never coast through anything, no matter how small, whether there's 10 people in the room or 1,000 people in the room. Just there is no coast, right? There is always keep the bar high for yourself so that every time you are doing what you're doing, you're hitting a high mark. And I don't know that good luck does come from hard work for sure, but I think it comes from frequency and consistency.
Hmm.
And then people know to find you when they're like, oh, Susan Werner's the person that does that thing.
Right.
Okay, great. Yep. Then you come to mind, even though you can't do everything and you can't be everything, but you can be the best version of yourself you can be. And you can hold the bar high for yourself. And I guess I've learned to do that, and some good things have come from that.
So we heard you on the Person You Want to Be podcast, talking about your upbringing, about how your parents were able to support 6 kids through school at a time when resources were more abundant and generous in America. I think we've all noticed that there is a greater feeling of scarcity nowadays.
Scarcity.
So how do you keep generosity and abundance in your own life, even as it kind of is on the decline in the country?
Wow. I love that question. And that seems like a really solid observation, the scarcity feeling. And though, you know, we didn't have much money growing up, there was not a feeling of scarcity. There was not. There was a feeling of enoughness.
Mm.
And some of that, I think, had to do with commitments to public education, commitments to higher education. I had Pell Grants.
Me too. We love it.
Yes. Well, someone made a decision, right?
Right.
Senator Claiborne Pell, who was from Rhode Island, I think, thought this was helpful. And it played a role in your life, in my life. Even though there may not have been resources in the household in that way, but there was a commitment on part of the government to see that everybody up and down the economic ladder could avail themselves of these resources. That has changed, I think, in a way that is concerning and is a loss. I think a lot of us feel it as a loss, a loss for other people who may not experience those things. I will say that my parents were good about when things were hard on the farm. They didn't feel like they were going to trouble the kids with this. That was for them.
Mm.
And my parents were, you know, in ways we look at previous generations, like not very fully formed people, or that they were walking around in the dark. They never went to therapy. They were unaware of certain things. And it's true, they were. But it's also true that there was this sense of parents are parents, and that there are things that you are going to know and that you may struggle with. You don't have to share everything with your kids. And that discipline is something I appreciate more and more as I get older, especially as they get older and they continue to function as adults, even in their 90s. It's astonishing and a real blessing to everyone around them.
Wow. When I saw that you were coming back on Kayamo again for the second time last year, was your first year, I was not surprised. You have a reputation for being very personable on stage and instantly able to win over an audience. And we've seen it happen over and over again. And it is incredible. How do you manage to keep a good relationship and a good boundary with your audience? And how has that evolved?
Well, thanks for saying those kind words. I try to keep a show right now, right in this moment. Even if I'm playing a song I've played many times before, I had a great voice teacher who said, even though you've heard this song before, they haven't. So sing each lyric as it comes up, each line of lyrics, as if you're seeing it for the first time. Almost like a TV anchor person reading off a teleprompter. Surprise, here's the next line. And if you keep yourself present in that reaction, it's present for the audience too. The minute we go on autopilot, the audience feels the energy go down. But if we are, if we bring this intensity to it of like, whoa, look at that line, which is hard when you've done a song 1,000 times.
Right. What's the mindset that's happening for you when you're like, I've done this 1,000 times. How am I going to make it sound fresh?
Two things. One is to really visualize this teleprompter, like see the lyrics coming up right in front of you and going, and then you sing that. And the other thing is to remember that there's somebody in the audience having a crappy day. There's always someone out there having an absolute crap day. I talked to a guy today who came with his friends, and one of them fell down the steps on the cruise ship, and they had to be taken off. And so he's here by himself. And I could just see he was so disappointed. And I said, maybe, you know, are you a musician? Maybe go to the jammers thing. Because the jammers thing is where people bring their instruments and they sing a song and other people play along. And what I see is people making friends because the groups are small, right? Instead of sitting in an audience with 100 other people or 1,000 other people, the jammers is this little breakdown. It's this little almost cafe setting, and you can make friends in there. And he said, I am a good singer. I said, there you go. Anyway, about the idea of giving a show and keeping it in the moment, I do think there's always somebody having a crap day, and sometimes it's you. But if I give a good show, then I feel like I did something useful. That to me is a good feeling.
Oh, I love that. I like to think about, like, Lizzie, you may be tired and you've played this song a million times, but have you thought about the cost of babysitters these days? You owe these people a show.
Yes. Tony Bennett said something in an interview once. Tony Bennett said something to the effect of, hey, he said, when I go out there, I remember that people had this date on their calendar for weeks. People paid to park their car and they paid to sit here. I am determined to show them a good time. Keeping that thought handy sometimes when we don't feel like it, it's just good to look. Tony Bennett brought this right for like 98 years in a row.
If the mindset works for Tony, it'll work for me.
I think Tony had a good track record, right?
Okay, so I was delighted to learn that you studied opera and were trained in that discipline. But nowadays, you think of it more as like a party trick because you're a folk artist.
It is a party.
It's not something that, it's not something that's central to your performance these days. And you have said you weren't loud enough to be an opera singer.
Right.
Okay. What parts of your opera training do show up for you in your performances, your breathing, the way you present your songs as stories? Like, what's still there?
This is a great question coming from you because you're a singer, right? Yeah. So some of what I'm going to say is probably familiar to you. But the idea being, I had this great voice teacher and he said, are you making noise or are you making sense? So instead of making big noise and like throwing the wind past your vocal cords with as much force as possible to make as much volume, Are you making sense? Is your communication as close to speech as possible? And that way you don't wear yourself out. You're making sense. You're communicating with the audience. Mm-hmm. That's an important part. Also, because I don't seize up. You know, I had years of somebody saying, you know, actually touching your stomach, right? Of like voice teachers of like, okay, I think you're gripping in here. Why are you gripping right now? Think of Pavarotti. Right. Pavarotti was generous sized around the middle. Okay?
Yes.
Pavarotti did not grip. No one cares if you grip. This doesn't help anything. Let yourself be the size you are, the girth you are, and let your story come forth. Right?
Yeah. I mean, as a woman performer, that one hits hard because we are always hyper aware that we're being looked at when we're on stage.
You got it.
But it actually doesn't function. It's not functional for the music to be thinking about your appearance. I always think about the weird faces and, you know, postures that I make to make the correct sound. And it's not cute.
It's torture of a sort. It's self-torture of a sort.
Right.
But what people walk away from is not saying, damn, like her rib cage was really tight. No one walks away with that. What they walk away is, I just loved how she sang that song.
Right.
That really moved me. Mm-hmm. Or that took me on a trip, on a ride, right?
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so interesting. Wow. Amazing. In writing so many songs about other people, you've drawn the conclusion that I see us all as much more alike than different. So how do you use that knowledge of people to help you figure out this strange place the country finds itself in?
Yeah. I was talking to Rob on the Kiowa cruise today. We were talking about different parts of the country, and he's in Florida and he has friends in Louisville and his brother is in Kentucky. He can't talk to his brother. And I said, I mean, it's funny that you're bringing this up because I just had this conversation earlier this morning. I said, well, you know, what a lot of us have in common with each other is, you know, cholesterol and foot problems. And if we remember that, you know, that's the ultimate, is the vehicle, right? Your physical vehicle has got to get through this life, and then it doesn't. If we remember that we're physical vehicles moving through this together, maybe we can let up on each other a little bit and give each other a little grace. You know, if you watch Fox News and you watch MSNBC, CNN, you go from channel to channel and they're all selling like Sky Rizzy or whatever. They're all selling, right? They're all selling psoriasis medicine.
Yeah.
They're all selling Keytruda, which is a cancer drug, right? But between the ads of whatever side of the spectrum you may be on, there are these concerns about your physical vehicle. We're all moving through this thing in a skin bag, right?
Oh, funny.
And maybe with that, we can give each other a little room and a little grace and find our way in.
On that same note, so the politics that appear in your songs are couched in humor and seem like, for the majority, they are for people who are liberal, people who agree with you. Historically, how have you felt about politics in your songs, and how, like, if at all, is that changing?
There's a saying, shut up and sing. If you express your point of view in a song, people will hear it because you took the time to put it in a form and you're bringing some talent to it. People will hear it. They may not agree with it, but they'll hear a song. If you speak on stage, like, you know, our current president is, you know, an owned by another country. If you say something like that in a speech or in speech out the front of your face, people tune out. If you take the time to form it into a coherent argument and you add talent to it, people respect that. They'll sit through it. They may not agree with it, but they'll sit the whole song. And I
think, have you found that, Lizzie?
Yes and no. There are times when it's not so much tune out, and this very much has to do with me being Black. People, there's an elevated level of anger when and reactivity when I say things, which doesn't stop me for one second, but it just means that I do get yelled at and walked out on at times. But it's a good litmus test to know where people are at. I think that, like, as women, we often are a mirror for people, and the words that come out of our mouths can really bring out people's emotions in a particular way. So I try to use that as a tool. And yeah, the thing of, like, for me, beauty is a Trojan horse. And if I write a beautiful song that has a hard message, I can get it across
beauty
to people who might
horse.
Not be open to hearing someone like me say the same thing. Oh,
that is so well put. That is so well put.
The girls who get it, get it.
And the fact that you know that and that you can employ that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I think that's our job.
Awesome.
We have to reflect the times. It's what Nina Simone said.
Yeah, and Nina Simone was writer every day. You know, more on point every single day. Mm-hmm. She's one of those artists who looks better and better in the rearview mirror.
That's so true.
Yeah. Mm.
Susan, you are a winner.
I'm a winner.
You're a winner, baby.
What did I win?
So your latest record, as you know, Halfway to Houston, won the Folk Music Awards Album of the Year. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Let's think about these types of awards. How have you felt about accolades such as these in the past, either when you are winning them or losing them? Like, how have your feelings shifted throughout your career?
I'm surprised when I win anything. I have to tell you, this was a total shock. Even to be nominated was like, where did this come from? You know, I'm a good artist. I'm not a great celebrity, right? Mm-hmm. And to be a celebrity is...
But you're like a great celebrity in the world that you are in. Mm. You know, I have like dozens of friends who are like into the Susan Warner catalog.
Oh, I'm honored.
Mm-hmm. For folk music, you're a celebrity for sure.
I should have put mascara on for this interview, clearly. I do think that there's a thank you. Maybe because folk music, you know, does reward authenticity, even if you miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I think higher profiles sometimes require a filter to make sure that you are executing within your bin in the record store, within your genre, whatever that definition is. And so you may have a gatekeeper you're working with to say, look, this is not really gonna fly with certain of your fans. Are you willing to risk that? Or do you want to keep, you know, paying the bills? Do you want to keep whatever your goals may be, you know, earning a quarter mil a year? And to fly below the radar buys you some liberty.
Yes.
I really treasure that liberty. I thought I wanted a different career, a higher profile career. But what I really, really wanted was to keep making new things with some challenge and risk. I got what I really wanted. I didn't get some other things. But in the end, I got what I came in wanting anyway. And to make your peace with that and make the most of it, it's really liberating. Mm. It is. And it's a joy to have been honored with that award at Folk Alliance this year. This record's called Halfway to Houston. And I have family in Texas now. And I was trying to understand, what is Texas? Mm. And I made 3 trips down there and drove around, drove down to Corpus, drove out to El Paso, went to Big Bend National Park. And one secret to the success of this record, I'll tell you, is that I would talk to Texas friends and I would say, I'd give them a napkin, right? A bar napkin. And I'd give them a pen. I'd say, hey, draw me a map of Texas and the places that you think are really beautiful. And they all came up with about 5 of the same things. And I thought, I'm just going to go see what those places are. And it helped me understand how Texans love Texas. I may not agree with everything that's brought forth out of Austin in terms of politics, but we can all agree on beautiful things.
That's true.
And they knew Texas, and people are happy to be ambassadors for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I'd never done that before, but I'll tell you, if I do another travelogue, I'm going to do the same thing.
So are you maybe going to do another travel? Because I'd like to know, because I think exploring a place through this medium of like making a whole album about it is mm-hmm. like really interesting and really cool. And I want to come with you next time. So where are we going, Susan?
What's the destination?
You know, you can cross off a bunch of destinations if they don't have a musical style associated with them.
Cool.
Right? As a musician, as a songwriter, you want to go someplace where you're going to have a soundscape to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So previous travelogues were NOLA, which is New Orleans. So I had to learn a lot of left-hand piano stride, mm-hmm. right? I spent a lot of time with a metronome going boom, okay, boom, Kank, Dr. John, right? Mm-hmm. That's a whole language. And the American in Havana project, I went to Cuba 3 times and wrote songs while I was there and learned how to play guitar with a backwards rhythm to us Americans instead of like kick, kick, snare, kick, kick, snare. Cuban guitar is can't get can't bon a can't get a can't bon can't get a can't bon, or the one is actually absent entirely, a little like reggae out of Jamaica, right? 1, 2, 3, 4 can't get 2, 3, 4 can't get 2, 3 right? And the absence of a one, I'm getting a little professorial here.
Oh no, this is good.
We like it.
Because I think it has to do with our roots as a nation. Like the clave changed all of America.
Yes. Yes.
It's why we are where we are today.
Yes. And it's one of the wonderful things about being Americans is we have great music.
We do.
This is how we're going to fight back, friends. Mm-hmm. We're funnier and we make better friggin' music. Mm-hmm. We do. This is how we fight back. Stay funny. Stay excellent.
Oh, I love that. Can I circle back to a question that I forgot to ask earlier? I want to talk about desire in your music, especially early on in songs like All the Above, Signing Your Name. Mm-hmm. I feel like desire is a character personified in your music. So these days, what is your relationship with wanting big?
Mm-hmm. When you say wanting, do you mean interpersonal, like get it on?
Dealer's choice on how you answer. Really, just like the desire, the yearning, more as an action than the object. You know what I mean? I think that action of wanting is really strong in your music.
You know, in musical theater, they talk about the I want song, right? The character comes out on stage early on. This is going to be in the first 4 songs. It's got to be, or you're in trouble with your show. We need to know what the characters want to carry us across an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I found myself writing earlier in my career. It was more autobiographical, and that was the moment. I mean, there were, these white chicks coming out and singing their feelings, often about relationships. Some of them didn't work out. And look, there's a lot to get out of that, right? I mean, Taylor Swift, honestly, and I'm just like Taylor Swift. I want to be clear for the audience. I consider myself exactly the same. I'm on the same exact plane. But anyway, to say your relationships about breakups and right. And this is occupying a lot of our windshield, right? When we're younger. Now I find myself writing I want songs, but from another character's point of view. I have a song called The Last Words of Bonnie Parker. Mm-hmm. And the point of view is Bonnie. It's revealed later in the song that this is Bonnie Parker. I just gave away the piece of the story here. But it's revealed that it's her. And that she's speaking to Clyde in this song. And she's saying in this song, I don't really care what's right or wrong about it. I don't want to know. I don't want to know why my marriage didn't last with my husband. I don't want to know any of this. I just want to be with you. And the song started out as sort of a, I just want to be with you. I knew I had that much, but I didn't know who was talking. I didn't know who they were talking to. And it appeared to me at some point after moaning for about 3 days, I just want to be with you, that maybe this is Bonnie Parker saying, to hell with it all. I want you and I'm going to arrange my life around you. So sometimes to move the I want outside of ourselves gives us room to live lives we're not having. Like they say, a novelist lives many lives, and that by reading novels, we live many lives more than just our own. Imagination does a lot if we give it some room to do it.
All right. I want to ask you a question about the song Tiny Texans.
Yeah.
It's my favorite, I think. You wrote it with Sarah Hickman for the Texas toddlers in your life. So, Susan, what's your relationship to little kids? As I feel like you have a type of little kid energy. You're like a genius / little kid. So what's it like when you get together with kids?
So I have great nieces and great nephews in Houston and in Corpus. And it's really a delight to be around them now, maybe because I'm not so busy with the early part of my life. Like there's a moment when you can be present, and I'm really present with them now. And to watch them with Legos, to watch them doing, all this stuff, ride the bikes and take walks. And oh my God, the dogs. And I love them to death. And So here's an example. Abel, the great nephew in Corpus. So we were there for New Year's Eve. And in Texas, people blow a lot of fireworks up. Like it's a huge holiday. And Abel was standing at the window. He's three. And he turns and he says, I can hear the sparkles. That's how he experienced fireworks, that you can hear what you're seeing. What? And you just want to be there for that. Like, just be there. Don't miss it. I'm sorry. You had another question about this. I'm not sure I answered it, but.
No, that was it. What's it like when you get together with little kids?
Well, they're just they're present in the moment. And I think to be an artist and look, we get to live charmed lives this way. You know, we're actually rewarded for being people who live in the moment. That's pretty great. But it's also why a lot of us wind up with like, oh my God, like how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to keep a life that's organized while being so present? And again, I think it's this relationship with the phone we talked about earlier. Like, okay, the phone is part of organizing my external life. But if I have that near me, I kind of dull my internal life. Mm-hmm. So managing time away from it lets us be kids, because three-year-olds don't have phones yet. Mm-hmm. Right.
And they can still picture a whole book in their imagination, you know?
Yes.
Speaking of imagination and some of the stuff we were talking about with writing, you write male characters very well in your songs.
Hey, thank you.
And it takes empathy and that stepping outside of yourself. Have you always had that empathy and that ability to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes? What is it like for you to step into a man's shoes in the moment of a song?
Thanks for that question. I got better at it after I started writing this musical, which I'll talk about now a bit. I'm writing a musical called Bull Durham, the musical, which is based on the MGM film about minor league baseball. And in working on that, I've had really good help from Ron Shelton, the book writer who wrote the script and directed the original film, and also Jack Fertel, who's a major figure in musical theater in New York. He taught at NYU. He's a producer, and he just knows what a theater song needs to do. And I would write songs for this, for Crash, for Nuke, and they would say, like, okay, this is a great idea. This language here is not actually how a guy might say this. They would just point at it. And suggest an alternative approach that was truer to how these two heterosexual guys might express how they feel. And it helped me learn a little bit, almost like the what suit of clothes to put on somebody.
Mm.
Like a tailor, right? You'd put this on them, you wouldn't put this on them. And to be a lyricist, to be a good lyricist, is to be responsive to that feedback and to know when you're not really using language they would use. And I've gotten better over the years with each song to make sure that the lyrics are consistent to this world. Don't get too fancy. Don't throw out some multisyllabic word that you learned in graduate school for some character like Bonnie Parker, right?
Right.
Don't do that. And you become better at corralling your language to speak for this character in this setting. And by doing that, again, you enter their world. And it's such a relief from my own. It's a vacation. It is. Good art should be a vacation in many ways.
Yeah.
And here we are on vacation. Woo!
We made it. All right. One more question and then a Texas theme lightning round. So on the new record, there's a duet and a co-write with Tish Hinojosa, sisters. It's about the relationship between Juarez and El Paso. What did you know of those towns before you visited, and how did it change your perspective on the division of Mexico and the U.S. after you wrote the song with Tish?
Hey, thanks for asking that. Tish Hinojosa was great on this. I'd never been to El Paso. Again, it was on the bar napkin when I asked Texans to draw a map of Texas. Here are places you need to see. Alpine, Marfa, the lights of Marfa.
Did you post pictures of these maps somewhere?
I should have. I regret it.
It's not too late.
I don't know that I took pictures.
Oh.
I don't know that I took pictures.
Well, friends out there, you're just going to have to draw these maps of Texas and send them to basicfolkpod@gmail.com. Thank you.
With your five favorite places, with your five most beautiful places in Texas. So I'd been to, right, San Diego and Tijuana, right? But I forgot about the Juarez component when I went to El Paso. I'd totally forgotten about it. I just went to out on I-10 and arrived at El Paso, and it looked kind of like Albuquerque or Santa Fe. It's up and in the hills. And when I went to the El Paso Star, which is on the side of a highway, it's on the side of a mountain. When I went to the El Paso Star on the side of a mountain, there's a lookout, and it must be 1,000 feet above the city. And it's highly recommended in all the tourist guides. So I drove up there, parked the car, went out to the lookout, and I could see to the north El Paso and to the south Juarez. And between them, like a spine, the border wall and the Rio Grande. And it struck me that these were back-to-back figures. And the song showed up from there, and there's always sister cities. Every city in the United States has a sister city. And clearly these were sisters. And I went to a historical museum, and there was no border wall when these two towns began. There was no division at all. And that it was a completely politically cooked up thing, that there should be a division at all.
And like all borders, we might add.
Well, there's that, right? There's that. Yeah. It serves somebody's purposes, but maybe not the purposes of the place itself. At any rate, I started seeing these sisters sleeping back to back in the high desert. And the song has been so well received, I think because of our interconnectedness and some of the cruelty that goes on dividing people who have much in common from each other. The producer, John Anthony, did a great job. It's just a lovely track. And Tish sang on it.
Yeah.
Oh, it just made it perfect, right? That there were two women's voices singing. And thank you for pointing out that track. I'm really honored by that.
Nice. All right. You ready?
Are you ready to do a little lightning round?
A lightning round.
What is your favorite barbecue spot in Texas?
I do like the Salt Lick. I mean, yeah. I have been to the Salt Lick. I think I went to Black's Barbecue, too. That was good.
It was part of the research.
You know it. This is my favorite part of my job, is that I can write it all off as, oh, yes, I'm having a vacation and I'm writing it off. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You really are. We live the dream.
We live the dream. That's exactly what you do. Hey, it's right. It's research. So those two are, you know, you can't miss with either one of them. It's about the sauce. It really is about the sauce.
What is your favorite Texas radio station?
You know, the one out of Houston has been really kind to me, and the name eludes me right now, but they've been just great to me and built a following for me at the Mucky Duck in Houston.
Very nice.
What is your favorite road to drive in Texas?
Highway 90. Highway 90 is terrific. It's not an interstate. I-10 will make you just not want to live after a while. Right. It's just endless. But Highway 90 takes you through Alpine and Marfa, and there are the lights of Marfa. There is this, I guess, a story or a myth about the lights of Marfa that you should see them once in your life. I'm telling you, I saw the lights of Marfa. You should see it. It's a real thing. It's not just a hippie made up sort of deal, like you're high and you imagine things. No. There's something going on, whether it's a gaseous field between you at the lookout point and the mountains in the distance. I don't know what it is, but the lights do something weird right above the horizon, telling you for real.
Cheers to that. Okay, where's the best hike in Texas?
Big Bend. Big Bend National Park, and most people don't know about it. It's way down there in the southwest corner of the state. And there's hikes you can take there, and it has formations. You know, we think of Yosemite and El Capitan. But Big Bend has formations, too, that you can see and, like, look through. Like, one of them is, like, almost creates a telescope effect.
Cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Big Bend. And you can walk across the Rio Grande there and walk back. And you see how easy it is to cross the border and how people do it all the time. And it's just a beautiful setting. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend Big Bend if you're doing an RV thing. It's a worthwhile stop, and it might not rise to the top five of your list of things to see in the United States. I'd certainly put it in the top 10.
Okay, who is one Texan that everybody in the world should know about?
Willie Nelson.
Done and dusted. I mean, easy.
No one can disagree with Willie Nelson. And by the way, he shows up with his opinions.
Yes.
He does. And how does he do it? He simply shows up physically at events, which express his point of view, and he sings songs.
And he feeds people.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jesus Christ might be here on the planet now, right? It could be. What if Jesus came back as Willie Nelson, right? Perfect. This might be it. We might be living in the end times. And I hope, you know, I hope people understand Willie is, and there might be something very special going on. We're not appreciating enough, I'm saying.
This is the second interview that we've done today on KMO and the second time Willie Nelson has been discussed in, on an interview today.
There it is.
All roads lead.
Yeah.
I have a theory. In this moment, you know, Pope Francis is not doing particularly well. So maybe if this Pope, you know, kind of, you know, peace out.
Redacted.
Right. Maybe, you know, if Willie's up to it, I think, I mean, I think he represents the right values.
Yeah. Cool. At the back end of the podcast, we are diving deep into wonderful, wild ideas. Susan, thank you for your time. Let's get back to cruising.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by CJ Nungesser. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can listen wherever you get podcasts. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. Find us on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. Or you can check out our website, BasicFolk.com. If you enjoyed this episode, perhaps you can send it to your friend who also grew up on a dairy farm and understands what it means to be a hard worker, and now perhaps they're an interior designer or a social media influencer where they are working hard, but it just looks a lot different. Send it to that friend. They surely would appreciate getting to know Susan Warner. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.